It's all cold down along the beach. The wind's whipping down the boardwalk. And man, you guys know what time of year it is. What time? You guys all been good and practicing real hard. Yeah. Clients, you've been rehearsing real hard now. So Santa, bring you a new saxophone, right? Everybody out there been good? Or what? Oh, that's not many. You guys in trouble out here. Yeah, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Here we are. Welcome to our annual Christmas party. Living Clean and Sober with Johnny Rags and Ken McDonald. More so not with Ken McDonald.
Ken's not here today.
I noticed his chair is empty. So.
His chair is empty.
How you doing, Art?
I'm good. Merry Christmas.
Same to you, my friend. My house is here.
Your house is there. I couldn't find batteries for it.
I know. We got to take care of that. It's got to light up and all that. You know what I mean? Get the full effect.
We'll try for Monday. How's that?
Amen. We have some special guests today. We have Gail, who is her second time on the show, correct?
Yep. Coming
Gail,
back.
Gail killed Hi, John it when and she Art. Was on the show.
Not
Gail's
really.
From Staten Island, and we welcome her. Well, but lately North Jersey, right?
I'm going back to North Jersey in 2 weeks.
And California by proxy, right?
Yes. By proxy.
We have my dear friend Scott joining us today. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you.
And we have the lovely Michelle over
and
there.
And you remembered my name. Lovely.
See that? Yay. You impressed?
I am.
Michelle came all the way from Florida to do the show. How about that? Neat. Everybody impressed about that?
You can tell by the tan.
Yeah, I could see that.
Everybody else is white up here.
And we have a studio audience, too, which we don't usually have on Monday nights. So welcome, everybody, to the show.
How's Thank things, you. Girl? Things are really, really great. Happy that
Christmas?
It's Christmas.
getting ready for Santa.
Did you see him?
I did not see him. No, I was talking to Kevin. Carlos? Did not see him, but I'm all ready for Santa.
No. You want to sit on his lap?
I want to sit on his lap, and I'll have to do that later.
Okay.
And maybe. I want pictures.
Can't wait. You want pictures?
I think that might be a private thing.
I wore a dress on purpose.
You're looking kind of
for your pictures.
So we have all kinds of different people here today. Yeah. Which is
quite a nice group.
About. Scott, you look very disinterested. What's
up? I'm not disinterested. I was just thinking about, I'll play Santa if you're going to sit on the lap.
All right, we got it going now, baby. Marty usually gives one of them things.
Got a lot of offers. A lot of offers.
So what's been going on since you were on the show last?
What's been going on? I have been packing to go back to Jersey. And my home group is up in Parsippany, New Jersey.
Oh, nice.
So I have been going to my home groups, going back and forth, and just getting ready for Christmas and, you know, just having a lot of fun with my children and friends and you guys, and just doing my thing.
I hear you. It's finally nice to see you. It's been
Thank
a while.
You.
We see each other on Facebook quite often.
Yep. I just
like
took. Now we're physical.
Yeah. Physical.
I talked to Kevin about opening another phase, I guess you would say, or another entity of City of Angels in the north part of Jersey with Cheryl. So hopefully we're going to get that going.
That's funny. I had the same conversation with him about PA.
Okay.
So.
And PA, you want to do something out there?
Yeah, I looked at a place the other day, and I think it's going to work.
Cool.
Wow.
So it's in, like, right off a street road.
Okay.
I forget the name of that town.
We can map question.
Yeah, we can always do that. We'll have a big party when we open.
Yay, party.
Pennsylvania needs it.
Yeah.
Yes. And the north part of Jersey does, too. Right. We don't have anything up there. Yeah. We'll have two parties, then.
Yeah, I'll go to all of them.
Look, people got to come all the way from Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll come visit you, too. Yeah. I want my tan back.
I will be down
back.
There soon.
Good.
I have a conference I'm going to in January.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
So, and when I go down there, I stay at Lighthouse Point.
Not too far from where I am. Right on.
So.
Take you to some good Italian places.
Ooh.
There you go.
Some real meatballs.
Yeah, I'm Italian. I gotta have real meatballs.
Listen, it's all about the food.
That's right.
Yes, that's right.
Feed them,
sure.
They will come.
That's right.
I'm a meatball connoisseur. I won a meatball contest once.
Did you?
You did.
Yeah. I make the best
meatballs. Gail, did you make any meatballs downstairs?
No,
you did.
I should have. Yeah. I was busy packing. I would have lost the meatballs somewhere in the boxes.
A couple of them were rolled down on the floor of the bar. Find them in a month.
Yeah. Love
I'm
a good meatball.
Ball, man. Life is great. It's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I feel good about what we're doing, even though we're losing. But, you know. We're losing lots of people, too many.
Mm-hmm. Too many, yeah.
You know, I sat with the lieutenant governor the other day and, you know, trying to make some noise to get, you know, some things done. You know, it's just, it's insane.
Yes, it is.
I listened to the moms talk about losing their children. And, you know, it's a heartache.
It's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. I was just speaking to somebody downstairs who lost her brother, and her mother's here, and it's you don't get over something like that. Mm-hmm. Never. I mean, it's just, and I've been reading on the City of Angels website, I guess you would say, about how siblings are dying together because they're shooting up together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's just horrible, horrible.
And I have to tell you, really, my reason for being here, which that was the phone call that Kathy had just taken, is I got a call from a friend of mine down in Florida who I worked with. It was her brother-in-law that overdosed up here in September. And she said, Michelle, my father-in-law is having a really hard time, and we don't know what to do for him. And she's like, I know you know people up here, and I said, I have just the organization, you guys, City of Angels. Mm-hmm. And so I called Kathy, and he was supposed to meet me here. And I said, just come. I want to introduce you to the people here. They're good people. It's a 40-minute drive. Yeah. And there's groups, and there's things. They're doing this Christmas party. Mm-hmm. And he was supposed to come, and that's what she just said, that now he's not coming. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping to connect with him. But I was just in Ohio. I do a lot of work, and I have a lot of families in Ohio. And one of my good friends is Heidi Riggs. She's been on 60 Minutes. She did a lot of ads for... Her daughter was like the face of heroin in Ohio. Mm-hmm. She did a video for the Attorney General. And a beautiful girl, you know. 18 months from the time she picked it up until the time she lost her life. And Heidi's almost 5 years into it now of losing her daughter, but she turned her grief into advocacy and mm-hmm. started a nonprofit and sober living. We know that that's so important when they get out of treatment. And yes. But I was just there, and Ohio is number one.
Yeah.
In the country now. And wow. I said, I live down in Florida, close to Miami, where we had that Zika virus, mm-hmm. and the government threw all this money at this little pocket in Miami for alleged cases, but yet we're losing so many kids, so many people every day.
And yes. And that's where the money should be. Yeah.
That's where the money yep. should be. I did an intervention the other day, and I said to the mother, I said, I got 3 prayer cards in my purse right now. Just from me having, like, being somewhere and seeing a client's, going to a client's funeral. It's not okay.
Yeah, it's crazy. When I take my suit jackets to the dry cleaner, I take prayer card,
Mm, yeah.
It's too many. Mm-hmm. It's just too many.
I have
a friend. Ohio is a focus because I know there's nothing doing.
There's nothing going up there. We need to build treatment centers. Like that, what was that old commercial? If you build it, they will come.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, feed them, that's all.
I said that if you build it, because the treatment center's up there, they let them go. I just worked with a family the other day. Yeah, our son went to treatment. He went for 2 weeks.
It's more like you build them, we can fill them.
Yeah.
You can definitely fill them.
And for the most part, that's insurance companies.
Right.
They won't extend anything, so it's a vicious cycle. You know, they're treated, and then they get let go, and then they relapse, and it's a merry-go-round going round and round and round and round. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
Just doesn't make sense.
But then you have to think about, okay, we're here, they're there in Ohio. Mm-hmm. How can we help? Mm. That's my focus, my aim.
Start a City of Angels.
In Ohio.
In
Ohio.
Words.
Yeah.
As soon as you said Ohio, I didn't even have to mention it.
Right.
You said it, so I was like,
if it was someplace warm, I'd go.
Listen, if it's
start one in Hawaii, I'll be in the next plane.
But we actually had a lot of requests. You know, I mean, Kevin's been down in Virginia. They had a lot of deaths down in there, you know, so Kevin's actually spent a lot of time in Virginia. We've been getting, you know, they're having opioid deaths just like we are here, and we've been getting a lot of donations from, you know, coming up from Virginia. He's been doing speaking engagements down there. So it's not far-fetched that there's somewhere in the future we're going to be, you know what I mean, all over the country.
Well, what you're doing is working, which is why I said to this guy today, you have to come to this group and meet these people. They're the ones that are going to help you.
I had reached out to a friend of mine who lost her son. This January would be 2 years. And I reached out to her because I wanted to introduce her to Kevin. Mm-hmm. And we grew up together. South Philly, and we got Heidi, and now, you know, I'm doing this. She's clean, I think, I'm not sure, but I reached out to her, and I didn't get a response. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to stop trying. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get her over here and get her involved with what we do, and maybe she'll stop. And I understand you can keep doing that, and get into a depression about it and all that, but I mean, she needs other things now. So what better than someone that actually happened to, because a lot of our people, that they lost children.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get her over here to meet everybody, and today would have been a perfect day for her, just like you said with your friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, so I'm not done reaching out to her yet.
They have to want to do that. Yeah. Somebody has to want to do that and be right. Okay. So that's...
At times.
Yeah.
You know, it's like an
So
like
she's
an
reaching
addict,
out.
Like,
yeah.
Can you help me? I want to go away. You spend time with them. You get them ready. And then they go, oh, I'm cool now.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. They have Same to thing. Want to do that.
But I'll see her sooner or later. And, you know, my idea was to bring her on the show on Monday night and get her, have her meet Artie, you know, get her involved with what we do. Because, I mean, I've been doing this forever with City of Angels. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's my life's work.
I would love to be unbusy.
So would I. You know, you go throughout the day, and lately, it's been busy. So I'm not getting home from work till 6-7 o'clock. You know, and that thing that I went to Tuesday, I had. Did you go to the when to the Tuesday night thing we had?
No.
Somewhere in Woodstown.
I had a busy week this week.
So
getting
did
ready
I.
for
I
this Christmas there, party with, and this open house.
I was with Mike Stack Tuesday night. And all the lawmakers in Pennsylvania. So, my friend, you know Marty. Marty was there talking about her son. And, you know, I got to talking to her. Before you know it, the other thing was 6. Now it's 6:15. I'm still there. So it was about, you know, 40 minutes to get to where this was. So I couldn't do it. And I want to do all of it. As much as possible.
Yeah, no, you want to go everywhere, and there's just so much going on. You need 3 pair of roller skates.
So then I think to myself, where would I be more useful? Which one? That's what I have to ask myself.
Ohio.
I think you end up right where you're supposed to be.
Yes.
You're right.
Like you're supposed to be here right now.
Where'd this girl come from?
Florida.
Via Ohio, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and then New York, and then back to Ohio again, and then Florida.
Sorry, Scott. You're right. Well, like I said, I'll be in Florida next month.
Well, find
maybe,
me. Let's,
maybe before
let's
that.
Go have some meatballs.
Many things have gotten done over
a plate
meatball. Of meatballs.
Listen, over food. It's all about the food.
Oh, it is,
of course.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter where it's at, but what you have to eat, and they'll come.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, maybe... I'm so crazy.
Uh-oh.
Maybe 8 out of 9 things I do, I say, well, this speaker's going to be there, blah, blah, blah. I say, is it going to be food? Absolutely. I'll be there.
I'll be there.
Don't matter. The logistics...
The answer to, is there going to be food? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, when you're in recovery, then you start with the food, right?
Now we got Manio's right across the street.
Well, if you're Italian, you want
the
food, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I was thinking, like you were saying about the overdoses and the people dying, but and then the insurance. Like if you think about it, me when I was using it, when people are dropping dead from heroin overdoses, it doesn't keep people from flocking to that area. It floods them with it. That's where you want to be. So. The problem only gets worse in the area where the people were dying at, right within 2 miles from my house, 9 people in 4 days, you know, via Philadelphia, Trenton, whatever. But I mean, that's just the ones that have died. Not doesn't mention the ones that are saved in that. And then, so then you get the people that are seeking treatment. Well, as addicts, we know what, you know, we want treatment, we don't want treatment. But unfortunately, the people with the policies and procedures on it. Aren't addicts. And I would have to imagine the people at the top of that insurance business are not addicts. So they don't, they do it as a business standpoint and decision. They don't know really how to, you know, what it takes to, for an addict. Like, very rare is it one and done on a recovery end of it.
Sure.
So, and that's what a lot of things with the recovery goes, even jobs. I got myself a great job now. I'm a convicted felon. Multiple drug arrests, in and out of rehab institutions, but it took a guy in a position that runs the company who was also a convicted felon who's turned his life around to give me an opportunity. So sometimes you need the guy sitting on the other side of the table to be where you're at, because you know, the stigma of addiction in an addict sticks with you long after the addiction itself does, you know. And with the insurance thing, you need people with different thinking. I understand sometimes where they come from in the insurance because, you know, they get ripped off and there's always a scam and all that. But there's some legitimate people out there trying to get clean and trying to use the money for the right thing and not just going to save a job or because somebody else asked them to. So, I mean, there's got to be a better way to go about it. I think they need people on the other side of the fence helping them along with them decisions, yeah, you know, right. And then it just can't be a cut and dry. This is how it is. It's what's good for this one person isn't going to work for the next. And they need to, the adjustments need to be made there. So, but the people, the addicts kind of mess it up also for the people that really are legitimately trying to get help. Because you're like, you're saying now how busy it is in the field. Well, it's because it's wintertime. Nobody's going to be on. The prisons are more crowded. People turn themselves in on warrants in the wintertime. They're not turning themselves in June and July, you know. So there's a reason why people seek treatment this time of the year and don't have a problem being locked up because they got somewhere to go. And so you just need different thinking all the way from the top to the bottom.
Absolutely.
That's right. Well put. Because that's really what it's all about. You know, you could start at, like, say, jail, you know, and nonviolent offenses should be looked at as, okay, because I researched it. In the Bucks County Jail, there's 1,100 or 1,000 inmates, and 850 of them are drugs. It's 85%.
Right. A crime related to drug one way or another, whether buying or they did a crime because they were on drugs.
Something that had to do with that. So, what does that tell you? It tells you that, okay, a lot of addicts are going to jail when if they're sitting in jail and they have these, okay, we have to do a drug and alcohol assessment, but how much of that really works? I mean, the system fails every time. Because, you know, and I understand, you know, they're trying with the drug court, treatment court in Philly and all that, but it's not effective. It's not working.
It depends, but listen, I'm going to tell you, one of the things I was doing in Ohio.
Why don't you tell me?
I'm going to tell you something. Listen, Linda, listen, right? There's a
judge that I had met in Ohio, and he did drug courts, and he was pretty. His courts were successful, considering what we're dealing with. The success rates suck. We know that. But we met a guy and his little police station in Baltimore, Ohio, population 2,900. Wow. It was like Mayberry. And I'm not kidding. Right down to going into Mama's Diner, right? And anyway, somebody had reached out to me and said, this is what we want to do. We want to do kind of like what PARI does. Somebody comes into the police station, they ask for help, but there's no money, there's no insurance. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, the guy that I work with has relationships with a lot of treatment centers and good people and willing to give some scholarships. So we went up there and we said, okay, we're going to try to help you guys get this going. So we've been doing that. But recently, when I was up there, I said, I'd like to sit in on one of these drug courts. I wanted to see what's doing with it. We went into this other town in Lancaster, Ohio, another small town, met this judge, Judge Fields his name was, really good guy. Like, even though he probably is not an addict, he's somebody who gets it and realizes throwing these kids in jail or young adults in jail isn't doing it. So their program is 18 months, and it's all, you know, BS, like burglaries. It's all stuff that's related to you're trying to feed your habit.
Right.
And so they have the three phases of their drug court, and I don't want to get into all that, but 18 months. And I said to the one woman, I go, the probation officer, I go, what's your success rate? And she said 65%. I go, what do you base that on? And she goes, that we can keep them clean for a year.
Yeah.
Now, I was impressed by that because it's not just having them go and pee in a cup.
Right.
They're getting plugged into meetings.
Right.
The 12 steps, support, the families are involved, working, helping them with those resources. So I was really blown away by this little community who they've got something that's working. Yes. And they're getting it that the jails are getting filled up, and they've got to do something. We've got to come up with other solutions. Everybody's got to, I think, pull together and...
Well, if you really looked at it realistically, like reality, not...
Delusion?
Or fantasy. It's more... I mean, it's more expensive to house an inmate than it is for treatment or any other thing.
Right.
Pertaining to drugs and alcohol.
Right.
So we need something in place, whereas to say, all right, Michelle, this is your first time, you're going to go to treatment, one thing wrong, you go to jail.
Right.
Now, and go by that, you know, because I've seen drug courts where I used to run recovery houses, so okay. a lot of the residents were on drug court. Mm-hmm. So I had to go to the drug court in Doylestown, every other Thursday or whatever it was. And if someone used, okay, they spend a night in jail, and then they're released.
I mean, what good is
they
that?
They were doing, you know, some went upstate and got out and then violated their probation, you know, from Bucks County. They still had time to do there, right. but, were, you know. So the whole thing is messed up. Mm-hmm. What do they care? Oh, jeez.
What's one night?
Wow, big deal. I'm going to go to jail for one. You know what I mean? So that's a failure. Mm-hmm. They don't care. Mm-hmm. It's not a consequence enough for them to say, oh, shit, man, I better do the right thing. And not out of fear, but out of becoming willing to do it. You know, get the 12-step process into their lives. You know, get the commitment. Get the structure that they need. So where we could be successful,
right.
you know, rather than waste money, waste time, you know.
Right.
And, of course, violent crimes doesn't even come on the table.
Right.
You know, you forget that. But the ones where, you know.
Caught up. They get caught up.
Yeah. yeah.
They get caught up.
I mean, I like how you put it. You know, they were just stealing to support the habit. I mean,
right.
how many of us have done that?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Right.
I've done it.
Yeah, and then you say about the drug court, like she said, about the success rate, because they're doing more than just going to the bathroom and a cup.
Right.
They're going to meetings, they're getting plugged in, they're right. doing this. And that's with the thought that the more you do something, the better you become at it. Like mm-hmm. it becomes habit for you. And anything, if you think about it, anything in life you've done, like me, sports, trade, hobby, anything I've ever done, the more I've done it, the better I got. Except using, the more I did, the worse I got.
The worse you got.
So it's not always the more you do something. You got to be willing, too. You got to have the mind, not just every day going somewhere and doing it. You're thinking, the thinking, John always told me, the thinking's got to change, you know. It's just not a matter of walking in the door. But that was a good point that you brought up. That's why I said that.
And this judge, too, and this is why I was so glad that I had the opportunity to see this man at work, because it was a kid that came in. And they talk before they go out in front of everybody, right? So there were some that were going to jail for 30 days because that's what their thing was, and they missed so many times. It wasn't even that they used, they just missed. So here's the consequence now. You know, you're going to have to, they follow through with it. This kid came up there, and the judge before had said, we are recommending Vivitrol for you. And he, I don't know, he must have said to the judge, but I want to try Suboxone. And so this judge... You know, we talked about it in chambers, and then out in the courtroom, he said, young man, what did you decide? And he said, I decided not to do the Vivitrol. I'm doing the Suboxone.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at him and he goes, you know what? Okay, I gave you that choice. And I think I'm going to try to trust you, like I'm trying to get your family to trust you again. We're going to give you this opportunity to see if you can demonstrate that you're going to do this the right way.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, this is what we're doing. But I loved, and I don't know if those were his exact words, but he was basically saying, I'm going to trust you until you give me a reason not to.
Right.
And I mean, you could see the kid felt good about, here's your honor, saying that to him.
Right.
right.
So sometimes you just need someone to believe in you. Right.
And,
that builds their self-esteem, too.
I wish we could have a lot of judges like that.
And I read quite a few of them. Not one was like that with me.
I attended the drug court. I'm a drug alcohol counselor, and I work intensive outpatient in Morris County. So I attended when my clients would go. It starts off with three times a week.
Right.
And they really have to abide by everything. They go there. They pee in a cup. they come back to us at night. I ran the night groups, and they have to do the same thing. So that there wasn't anything in between that they could do. There were consequences, of course, if they did not. But it was a step down. They would do three, and then they would do two, and then they would do one. And they had to go to meetings and everything. And I would give them assignments. I'd say, you come back tomorrow, and I want you to tell me what you heard and what you learned in drug court. And it was really successful, you know, where we were. The success rate was quite high.
Wow.
Of course, there were a few that, you know, didn't abide. But there was one person that was in and out for a very long time. And he finally stepped down to once a week. And then he took off. He ran away. Now, does he really think he's not going to be found? So he stuck himself in a rehab because he figured, well, okay, I'll go to the rehab. Then I'll get out, you know, and I'll go to Florida, whatever. And they were waiting outside. They knew every single step this guy was going to do. You just don't get away with anything.
Right.
So in my experience, drug court was a very nice tool, you know, to use. And the judge there was also very nice.
Right. I think it makes
you want to give them dignity, and you want to give them, you know, that feeling of, oh, you're trusting me again, you know. So I found it to be good. And I'm sure different counties, you know, have different, you know, judges and not so nice and, you know.
But judges are all important because I've seen judges advocate for addicts. And when that's happening, things are getting done. Like there's this judge in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. Judge Duffy, I don't know if you heard about her. Big advocate. Everybody knows her. She's been all over the place to have a voice for the people that come in front of her and addicts in general. It's rare to see that, you know, because the judges are on the other side. They're the man, you know, whatever. But, you know, and she opens she has a thing, like monthly, that she opens it up to treatment centers, IOP programs, you know, outpatient, drug courts or whatever, that she wants to include to be able to utilize for people that need help. And she actually advocates for them herself, which is
nice.
Hard to find.
Right.
You know,
she might take some heat from other people.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But I remember when drug court got started in New Jersey. I had my own recovery houses back then. And Camden County was the first one to have it.
Right.
What we would do, like you said, we'd sit in the chambers, all the players.
Right.
You know, and we'd discuss every case. And then the judge would make a decision on what was going to happen next. Now, in that form, it worked. I mean, it got people, helped people get clean, you know. But I don't know. I guess either they get overwhelmed, which happens to everybody in this business, or there's too many people that they can serve. Because it wasn't like that back in 95, 96, like it is now. Nowhere near it.
No.
You know, I had the county, Gloucester County. I went to Judy Johnson, who was the commissioner still, that long. And I reached out to her and said, Judy, I'm getting all these people, I'm taking them in with nothing, and I'm not getting paid. They're leaving. They're beating me for money. She said, well, what can I do? I said, I don't know. So I left that meeting. I thanked her for having me there. A week later, I get a call from her, and she says, all right, I met with my people. We're going to give you the first 2 weeks of some of anybody's rent that comes to your place, Gloucester County residents. So they were open to that, and I met with Terrence O'Connor, who was the commissioner of addiction services in New Jersey, state of New Jersey. And I sat with him and talked about the problem then. Now, it wasn't, like I said, it was nowhere near what we have today. Nowhere near.
And it was still alive.
But Gloucester now is still very, very involved.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
probably one of the more
neat things.
That's one of the more involved municipalities in New Jersey, you know, down there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a lot of programs. We have a COA out of Williamstown in South Jersey, you know, and they're doing really good down there.
Well, that NAAD, what is it?
Oh, NCAD?
Yeah, they're doing a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was on a couple of them committees.
It's busy. That whole Camden County area down there is just, you know, was out of control. Mm-hmm. So South Jersey, Kensington, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, what do we lose? 9? Last weekend alone?
4 saves. It was 13 overdoses.
That's what you were talking about, right?
Yeah. 4 Narcan saves. Wow. 9 deaths.
So that just tells you there's fentanyl floating around the area. When you're looking at it like that, you know?
Now they're using this elephant tranquilizer, whatever it is.
Carafentanil. We had 2 dogs in Fort Lauderdale, or I think it's somewhere in Broward County, narc dogs that died because of inhaling.
Wow.
So their first responders, depending on where you're at, are being told when you go in to respond, because they respond to the overdoses. They respond to the scene.
Yeah.
They have to wear the breathers, not just the mask, but the breathers, gloves, and they're told not to touch any of the drugs because it's like such a small particle.
Yeah, a grain of salt.
And it doesn't take more than that, really, to absorb into your system.
Right. So if you breathe it in, and I mean... It's crazy, you know. I just can't wrap my head around.
No, it just boggles my mind what I'm saying.
It's the world we live in today.
Yeah, absolutely. Years ago, it was painkillers and alcohol. Mm-hmm. Now everything is heroin.
Now it's opiates and alcohol.
Now it's opiate and alcohol.
Well, my thing was always speedballs. So.
But you know, Gail, like you work as a therapist then too, right?
Yes.
So, I would have someone who was an alcoholic come in.
Yes.
And I would tell my other friends, you know, that are therapists that are in the field or whatever, we talk, and I go, you know, I had an alcoholic today, and I kind of got excited.
Yes.
Something different now.
It's like, ooh. Animal. It is, but it isn't.
Yes.
And, you know, I just, you're right.
It is a different animal.
Population now, it's the age is younger, more progressed.
Yes.
And, and just, you know, it's the heroin. It's the heroin. And I always say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I talked to this family the other day. I go, it doesn't matter how your kid got to this point. Does it matter really right now? We can go back and diet. Yes, they took pain pills. They had an injury or they didn't. They partied like all their other friends. But here they are now. So let's get them some help and figure out what we need to do moving forward. And getting beyond that stigma. And I think that's the toughest thing, which is why, again, I'm going to come back and say why I love you guys so much.
And even trying to get them to take that first step, it's hard to get them to take that first step. And then when they're ready to do it, how do you go, hey, can you wait 3 weeks?
To get a bag, you mean?
Yeah,
that's the problem.
They're ready now, not 2 or 3 weeks from now.
Right. I have a person, as we speak, in Cape May County, DUI funding. And I'm trying to get her into...
But, I mean, what do they got to call somewhere every day at 8 o'clock for 2 weeks?
But that's what she's
they're
been
not
doing.
Doing that.
Is that
I mean,
how it is right now in New Jersey? You have a 3-week waiting list?
Yes.
Yep.
For Medicaid.
So what happens during
for
the
Medicaid,
time?
For Medicaid, correct.
Yeah, well, they die.
The person dies.
Well, they're going to go back out and use. I mean, when you tell somebody, when somebody is to the point where they want help now, they want help now. You can't go, well, I can get you a bed in a week, because they're not waiting a week. They're in pain. They're fighting. You know what I mean? Right. The withdrawals.
Call
you know?
Suicide hotline.
They have to use.
Hold on a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they put you on hold and play Christmas music.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and you want to hang
yourself. Right. That makes me want to
jump. Yeah, right. It's sad. It really is sad.
But it is. And here again, you're the holiday time of the year. You know what I mean? People are looking at their situation and their families are off and, you know, people are happy and, you know, you're off in the shadows. You know what I mean? Not so much. And, you know, that's why we really try and, you know, help get them off the streets now. If they call for help, we go get them. We put them up in a hotel. We feed them. We get them to the doctor. You know what I mean? We do all those things and care for them. You know what I mean? That we can. we need to come up with, you know what I mean, a more realistic solution. Like, we really need a hothouse to be putting people in, because the hotels just get expensive, and we're a nonprofit. Yeah. We just don't have that kind of money. Mm-hmm. But the thought is we need to get them off the street. When they want help now, if we can't get them into a program, at least we can get them to a doctor. We can get them on Suboxone. Mm-hmm. You know, we can help them do some harm reduction. You know what I mean? So they're not really...
Well, at least with all that in place, at least you know they're not going to die.
And that's exactly it. You know what I mean? But those are the ones that are calling for us to help. What about the ones that aren't calling for us to help? You know what I mean? The ones that are still walking the streets, the ones that are standing around a fire outside of the train station in Kensington, you know what I mean, tonight. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a vicious cycle. You know, how do we break that? I mean, it's a giving time of the season. So, you know, a lot of people and a lot of organizations are out on the street, and especially now that it's cold, trying to gather them, give them blankets, get them off the street, get them into a shelter.
You know, you talk about experience, right? And how it is for, like, that I'm an addict. So I had a kid last week. He got into a place in Florida. He was approved. He was ready to go. Gets to the airport, falls asleep, misses the flight. Okay. Goes home, takes the mom's keys to the car, and what do you think he does? I know what he does. He goes and cops. So the dad's telling me all this last Sunday morning, it was, because he missed the flight on Saturday, and he was home Sunday. So I said, well, that makes perfect sense to me. And for the first time in a long time, I'm thinking about, well, I'm telling this guy the truth about my experience. He's a dad. He doesn't know.
No, he doesn't.
It doesn't make sense to him that the kid would come home and take the keys and go cop.
Right.
So he said, what do you mean by that? I said, it's what we do.
We adapt.
It's what we do. I said, that makes perfect sense to me.
But you know what?
Did he get on the plane the next day?
No, I got him in detox that day.
No, I'm only saying that because if he didn't go in cop, he wouldn't have went at all.
Exactly.
Because you're not going to go.
Right.
But see, that's where we fall into the problems. A lot of times we'll have a kid go, yeah, man, I'll go to treatment tomorrow. Yeah. And then tonight they go, and you know, it's that last party before we go away. And almost 98% of the time, that's the one that gets them.
When they say that to me...
But it's hard.
Tomorrow.
I mean, we've got them right here. You know what I mean? We can grab them by the collar and drag them into recovery. But
I tell them, no.
You know, that one time, you know, then we're getting that phone call and we're devastated because, you know what I mean? We had them right here.
Sure. And how many times has that happened? More times than I've
been. Oh, a lot of times,
It's just, that is one of the hardest ones to deal with because they're right there seeking help. You know what I mean? And you lose them on that very last second.
Because that's when I tell people, see, people say I'm a hard liner, but we're dying.
That's right.
I'm not going to say to the kid,
Is there another line? Is there another line? How do you not become a hard liner? I mean, how many kids do you need to see die before you become a hard liner?
Do you want to know how many times they've said to me, well, I'll go tomorrow. I got some things to take care of.
Yeah,
I
said, this every
isn't
time.
A tomorrow program. It's today. What are you doing right now?
What are you doing now?
And then they say, well, I'll call you back. And then you can't get
home.
And
then you know they're not going to call.
And then maybe 8 hours later, you find out they just found him dead in Kensington.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it's...
And it never surprises me, but it always saddens me.
Right.
Yeah.
Always.
It's insane.
It angers me is what it does. It's the
insanity of how that vicious cycle even just continues over and over
again. The point I always stress is the heroin isn't the problem.
You know, but
it's the
still,
disease of addiction.
You know what? But it still comes back to that. I mean, I had open heart surgery. My father had open heart surgery. So after watching my father go through all that suffering, you would think I would quit smoking and live a healthier lifestyle. No. I smoked more. I ate more high fattening foods until I had open heart surgery, and then I quit. You know what I mean at that point, but. Even though we see that suffering and we know it's bad for us, we can't resist.
Well, Scott mentioned it earlier. When I remember they had when I was using back in a long time ago, they had bags with coffins on them. That's the one I wanted. I don't know about you.
But I think
That's the one you go after. Where did he get the dope? He just overdosed. Where did he get the dope? Mm-hmm. That's what I want. So I'm reading in the Inquirer the other day, and it says they don't want to publicize.
I'm stuck on that one. Sorry.
National Inquirer.
Okay. All right. That's better. Yeah.
But it's like, all right. So they don't want to publicize that because that's what addicts do. They go, wow, I just read in the paper that the dope's killing people down on, you know, York Street. Let's go.
Right.
So what do you do, real?
You.
I think everybody.
You come to the radio show Monday nights. That's what you
that's
do.
It.
That's right. Everybody thinks they're invincible, though. I don't think anybody thinks they're going to die.
Well, because nobody thinks they're going to go get high for that last time, and that's going to be the last time. Right. I mean.
One more time.
That's it. And then when you find them and you see that there's one open bag and four other ones next to it, meaning they didn't think that that was going to kill them.
Right.
And
it was the last time I got high.
Right. The stuff that they have, I mean, floating around all over and every different names for it, like where I just came from, it's the China. It's fentanyl.
Right.
And I go, you're not shooting dope. Well, no, they're mixing it. I go, no, they're not. They might, a little and maybe a couple of them, but you're getting a bag of that China, fentanyl, carfentanil, whatever.
Right.
And that's why they had so many overdoses there.
Yeah. Well, most people aren't. It's not heroin they're doing.
Right.
And the problem with that is Narcan does not work.
No, and if it does, it's more than one, you know? I mean, I've literally watched them use anywhere between 3 and 4 Narcans on somebody, you know, ODing with fentanyl. And that doesn't always work.
Right.
That kratom, you know, you familiar with that down there? I never heard it about anywhere else where people were doing it but Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Has it just stayed down there?
Yeah, and it doesn't. I don't think it comes up in any of the cups. You know, and like a lot of the sober houses they have. It's like an opiate, right? I mean, it's a... I hate to use the word natural, but isn't it
it's
like
a natural opiate?
Right. And a lot
so
of,
is heroin.
Over the counter.
They grow it.
Yeah, but it's processed. It's not. You're not actually getting the poppy, you know.
The poppy
it's
baby.
Processed.
Right.
Well, it's the same with how, and this is just my experience, a lot of these, they come out of treatment, they're in the sober house, and then they're going to the Cava bar, and I would say, what the hell are you doing in a Cava bar?
I know what you mean. Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, why are you drinking that? What is it that you're trying to do? You're trying to get high.
Right.
You can put whatever spin on it you want. Right. That it's natural, healthy.
Yeah, but see, a lot of young people are going to try and replace their heroin with alcohol.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's okay because it's legal. I can go buy it in the store.
All right.
I mean, they don't wrap their mind around, you know, where it's going to take them, you know what I mean? Or where it could take them, you know what I mean? They just don't look at it like that. It usually does take, and it's going to eventually take them back. But again, how do you tell a 20-year-old you can never party again?
Well, I'll tell you what, there's certain problems with heroin. I've never actually, or myself, have never partaken in shooting dope socially.
Right.
I mean, I'm not sitting in a Starbucks getting all you know what I mean? But you can do that with alcohol.
Right.
So,
well, a shot is a shot. Shot of espresso, shot of heroin. And Starbucks.
Think about that, though. Imagine walking into Starbucks and you see two people with a cooker in the middle getting off.
Oh, my God.
How would that be? Yeah.
Not good. That probably wouldn't be good.
That would be a real problem.
That'd be a great experiment. Take a picture of a bunch of guys drinking out of paper sacks around a flaming drum, okay? And have the same picture with people getting high. Which one you think is going to get more negative? Right?
But hardly anybody ever thinks of that. Like, I'm old school. People come to me and say, what do you think about me drinking O'Doul's? You know, that beer.
Non-alcoholic beer.
I say, all right, here's one for you.
I think you need more therapy. That would be my answer.
And then I would tell them, here's one for you. How about me drinking
Non-narcotic methadone. How about that? And enjoying a cold one after a round of golf. I said, do you see a problem with that?
Right.
Well, that's the problem with O'Doul's.
You're looking to replace it with something. You know what I mean? So you need to find what the root of that problem is and deal with it.
And why do just one? Why just have one? You're not going to have one. And I always say, you probably never even drank beer in the first place. When this is what always kills me, they say, Michelle, I just want to have a glass of wine with dinner. When did you ever?
Yeah.
Sit down and have a glass of wine with dinner.
Right. When did you have dinner?
True statement. True statement. Well, what a show. This is awesome.
I think a lot of people don't understand clean and sober is clean and sober. Mm-hmm. If you're doing drugs, you can't have a drink. If you're drinking, you can't do a drug. You can't do anything. It's clean and sober. But I had a lot of clients say, well, I just had a glass of wine out of last night. Is that all right? Well, no, it's not all right. But I just had one glass of wine. No, it's not all right.
It's what part of clean and sober didn't you understand?
And it always leads into something else.
Did they still want to count their clean time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing coke, and you're not doing coke, but you're having a glass of wine, but that doesn't count. So I don't have to start all over again. It's only a glass of wine.
Right.
And you know if you have a lot of glasses of wine, you're going to go back to cocaine. Right.
Sure.
And vice versa.
Just had a conversation with a girl in Maryland this morning about that. She says, every time I drink, I want to do crack.
Yeah,
of course.
I said, so what's the answer?
Drink more? No.
Don't do any of it.
Drink more and have a meatball with it.
I remember a time. This reminded me of this. I don't know why, but because as crazy as I am, I thought of it. I was just clean. It was maybe 1989. I just moved down the shore. All right? I'm clean now, right? So my uncle, who I used to shoot coke and dope with, I'm hanging out with them because I didn't have any other friends. And, you know, so they continued to drink, him, my uncle, my brothers. So we're in the car, and I just happened to get a ride from him, and we're on our way home. He says to me, this is how he puts it, do you mind if we stop by the liquor store? I want to get a few cases of beer. And he said it like a joke, but I was threatened by it. Like I was, because I was afraid I wasn't going to stay clean. Mm-hmm. So I was threatened, and I said, no, not at all. I said, do you mind if I start waving a 9mm in your face? And he went, take it easy, I'm gonna get it. I said, well, that's how I feel when you say that. So none of it's any good. None of it. Not a little shot, I never had a glass of wine, like you said, Michelle.
But John, is one of those airport liquor bottles okay? It's small.
You know what the problem is for me? You don't have enough of it.
Right.
There's not enough.
So, but that's where I feel like the family, because I'm all about the families being involved. For me, they have to be. And when I have clients come in and they'd say, you know, I don't want my family involved, and I would tell them to get the F out of my office. I literally would, because I would say, let them be part of something good. And then they would always, you know,
but it's a family disease. When you use, it affects them. So it should affect them when you don't use as well. You know what I mean?
Right.
But there's always that piece of, you know, whatever. So I just experienced this a couple days ago. The kid that I worked with, he's got 7 months clean, and I'm talking to his mother, and she says to me, you know, he's doing great, da da da, and everything's going great, but you know, Thanksgiving, when he came home for Thanksgiving, he was in the garage and my brother and him drank a beer. And I said, what? And she said, well, I asked him what he was doing with it. And I looked at her and I said, that's a relapse. And she said, well, he said he was okay. And he really didn't. I go, that is a relapse. And I said, how dare your brother too, knowing the hell that you guys went through with this kid. So I had to really, I bit my tongue as much as I could because, you know, I didn't want to come off too strong, which is hard for me. But, you know, imagine that. But I wanted to use it as an opportunity to educate her, because I don't think she really even got it. Because in her mind, all she saw was her son, who she has detoxed on the couch, who she's locked in her home, and, you know, had her caught him walking out with the printer for the computer.
slept with her pocketbook under
all of it.
But because it's alcohol, right. It's like it's okay. You know what I mean? It shouldn't be. I mean, that's what people don't keep in mind, that you just have to keep that in the back of your mind. That one drink, it could be your trigger. You know what I mean? To send you right back into that life again.
It's like having it gone and playing Russian roulette.
And that's with where that word enabling.
I mean, you know, I get there's going to have to come a point in time. But there has to come a point in time where you have to accept it as a person that you're going to go out and other people are going to be drinking. That's not right away, though. It takes you time to accept that and discipline yourself enough to go, okay, this isn't going to bother me. I can go into that environment and say no and drink a Coke, and it's not going to bother me, you know?
But this particular family, too, was asking me questions about when they came up. Should we get rid of all the alcohol? And I said, listen, you need to have a conversation with them. If it were me, I'm all about truth. Talk about it. Say, you know what? I'm feeling like I should hide the alcohol. Do I need to hide the alcohol? Because one's an alcoholic and one's not. And I said, because they might feel worse if they walk into a house and everybody's like looking like we're not going to drink. I said, they're going to be around it. They need to learn how to be around it. And then take their butts to a meeting. Or pick up the phone and call somebody if they're uncomfortable.
Well, see, that's where the young people, they don't go, okay, I have this urge, I need to get to a meeting. You know what I mean? They don't do that. They get that urge and they act on it. You know, instead of going, okay, I'm having this urge, I need to, you know what I mean? I need to take a step. I need to call my sponsor. I need to go to a meeting. I need to do something, you know what I mean, to prevent me from going. A lot of them don't do that, you know what I mean? And only because they're young and inexperienced. You know, they let their emotion take their place.
I think it's a bigger problem with the family than the person, the addict, the alcohol themselves. They don't understand. I created where I was. It was a family group because they were so angry and they didn't understand the nature of everything. So I had tried to get them together to, you know, go over and, you know, try to involve them and say, you know, this is not your child anymore or your spouse. Or it's not them anymore. Take that out of the equation.
When it was my daughter, I didn't even call her Dana. I called her Reagan. You know what I mean? From The Exorcist. Because it wasn't my daughter in any way, shape, or form. Right. You know what I mean? It was just the child that I raised.
Right. And
I mean,
angry.
I have her back now. Right. You know what I mean? Right. But... Right. At the time, she was Reagan, and that's how we looked at it. And when we talked to other parents, it's like, they're like, I can't stand to watch him. Well, it's not your child. That's not the child you raised. That's not the child you bore. You know what I mean? You will get that child back, but that's hopefully not the child you know, I mean, you literally become another person.
Right. It's not your child anymore, or your spouse, or your relative, or whatever. It's not them anymore. They don't understand that. That's why, you know, I tried to educate them into what was going on and for them to become part of it. But the whole thing is they're so angry. Like, why do I have to be there? Mm-hmm. You know, why do I have to be here listening to you? It's their problem. No, it's not. It's a family.
Actually, what they don't realize that it's their problem. They live a stressful life because they're worried about their kid, didn't come home, they're on the streets, they're fighting everything. And yeah, that's a great word for it. You're consumed with all the wrong things that your kid is doing. You know what I mean? And you're doing everything under your power to get them to go to some type of a treatment program. And it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We try and tell parents that you need to heal yourself first. You know what I mean? Well, they're off getting treatment. When they finally do enter treatment, you need to be going to the family programs and family Naranons and learning to deal with your problems and learning to let go. You know, I mean, most parents, and I did it too, stress over things you can't control.
You think you can change the person. It's not the person anymore.
You're not. And actually, it's going to be, you're the last person that's going to change that person, being a family member. I mean, I couldn't deal with my daughter. I can deal with years and years and years and years, but I couldn't. A surgeon doesn't go operate on their own family. So, you know, you really need to look at it like that. It's not that they're not listening to you. They weren't listening to you in the first place, which is what got them into, you know, got them into this. So.
Well, there's so many dynamics, like my daughter. She called me when she needed help.
But you know what? And my daughter would come to me, but I couldn't do it. I had to get somebody else to do it because you're emotionally involved.
Same with my brother. He said, I had to call my sponsor. And I said, I don't know what to do. He said, well, what does he want you to do? I said, he asked me to get him some literature from the meeting. I said, what should I do? He said, get him some literature.
I mean, and I'll do that. I carry, you know, City of Angels brochures and Warrior Down brochures right in my bag all the time with me. But, you know, if somebody needs it, here you go. Here's the website.
There's a happy ending. There's a rainbow at the end of that story because I got him the literature and he's been clean ever since.
Wow,
and March will celebrate 20 years.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, but that's what happens. I mean, we've been doing this for so long. When somebody decides that they want to enter recovery, they're going to somebody that they know. You know what I mean? Is actively in it or working it or involved with it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
a
good thing.
So why don't
we
do this?
What are we
doing? Bring your daughter on and I'll bring my daughter on.
That ain't never happening.
Why not?
I would love to see her come
That'd
in and talk, but I don't think she's at that part of her recovery yet. That, you know what I mean? That she's willing to, I mean, she's doing good and she's doing all the things she's supposed to do, but she's not into that I'm ready to give back stage. You
well,
know?
You know what? You know what? I found out, like I went to my daughter, she had 3 years clean now. I went to her first year anniversary and what she was sharing, I was cringing.
No.
Because I hear other addicts say it, like you just said.
Right.
And I like, well, you got to be there for your daughter and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
But when I'm hearing it from her, I'm going,
yeah.
La, 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 la.
Yeah.
And she was real honest, too. And I said to her, I was joking with her after. I said, you had to be that honest?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's about me.
Right.
But because we know it's about you, not me. Right.
Right. Always.
It's a funny world. Where's she you? Said she or me. No, not me.
Or Artie.
We should end our hour here, man. I know we can go on for another hour, I think.
We could have gone on another 3 hours, 4 hours.
Well, we'll have to invite everybody to Monday night, man.
Listen, I'll come up
with
this.
Stay here for food.
Is there going to be food?
We'll make sure there's food.
Food. Right across the street. We meet for dinner before the shop.
We're called leftovers.
Are you in?
Yeah. You're still here for Monday night?
I'm actually going to Staten Island tomorrow morning.
Oh, gosh. If you want to step over cartons, you're welcome to my place. I'll make you meatballs.
Right.
You have to step over cartons.
I'm going
you have to step
here,
over cartons.
Actually, my friend's brother is
Hoarder, huh?
So.
No.
So he's coming back?
I'm going to be there, and I'm either leaving tomorrow night and headed, because I got to go back. I got to fly back out of Akron, Ohio.
Would you have to drive to Akron from here?
I drove. Because to return the car around here was $900.
Wow.
LaGuardia, Newark, Westchester, $900. I said, forget it, I'll drive. I'm a road warrior.
So you went 600 miles.
Music
so
on. I get to stop, though. Wait, I get to stop and see all my friends and my people.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So I never have to pay for a hotel.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Eat and enjoy my
friends. Very cool.
How about this? Where are you going to be Monday?
Monday, I'll be cruising back out of New York. I'm supposed to go to Nazareth because there's a great nonprofit up there that we're doing some stuff with, Partners for a New Beginning. Have you ever heard of them?
I heard
in Nazareth?
Of
yeah,
great
sounds
group.
Familiar. Yeah.
Start off in March, and they've really done a lot of great things, a lot of great fundraising. So, working with them, and that's really the only place I need to be on Monday.
What time?
Whenever I call my friend.
Well, we do our show Monday nights, 8 to 9.
Ooh, I get homemade sausage. Homemade sausage from her father. It's right off the boat. See? I got it down to a science.
Homemade sausage. Whoa.
So, 8 to 9 p.m. Monday night.
All right, let me check my schedule. I got you.
We'll see.
I put his number in as Johnny from the Bronx, but now I got to say Johnny from South Philly.
Johnny from the Bronx.
Just because I copped it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But I knew where you were from, right? I said upstate.
Yeah.
From Syracuse.
The snow state.
Yeah.
Good old girl from Syracuse.
Right.
Right.
Who had to make her way down to the city. To
ran away at 17. There's a story.
So she went from.
It was the 80s. I'm surprised I got out alive.
Six feet of snow to sandy beaches.
Right.
Well, hold the seat for you.
I would love that. Listen, this was wonderful.
We'd love to have you.
I would love to come back on.
When are you
good stuff happening.
I don't know. When I get rid of my boxes.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say something. I'm not. Scott, you're going to make another visit
Scott's
to the show before another year goes by?
It's been a year.
It was last Christmas.
Yeah,
wow, Scott.
He's our annual Christmas show guest.
Told you, I'm Santa.
So,
ho, ho, ho.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Scott. Thanks once again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. I love I get to see this.
Well, great to have if you listen, are. Monday night, we're going to have Michelle, hopefully,
on the show. There's lots of stuff we could talk about, right?
With other
we could talk
guests.
About what we could do with City of Angels and all these other places.
Yep.
Could, hey, can I get a picture? What's your name?
We always get a picture.
Can you get a picture for all of us, please?
Oh,
yeah. Me too.
No, tell me. All right. That'll do it for tonight. I want to thank all my guests. Thank you very much from my bottom of my heart. You lovely people. Thanks, Artie, for a nice job again. And we'll talk to you Monday night.
And happy holidays, everyone.
Be well.
Happy holidays. Ho, ho. All right.